Welcome to Digging Deeper in Grace, a ministry of Grace Baptist Church in Cedarville, Ohio. Our goal each episode is to dig deeper into the scriptures with a focus on our most recent sermon. And now, let's dig deeper. Hello, I'm your host, Bart Sheridan. We're back at the table today with Chris Miller. Chris led our church this past weekend as we worked through verses 14 to 26 of James chapter 2. It's our current sermon series entitled Faith Works. Chris, as I welcome you back today, I believe I know you well enough to observe that you really enjoy leading the church through studies of what can sometimes be troublesome passages like James chapter 2.
I think that's probably true, Bart. Probably because, you know, the Bible is so important to us. That's the first thing that Satan attacks in Genesis 3. And if there's any little question or trouble or confusion, I think the devil can use that. So I think that's why it's so important for our pastor to be able, our elders, to be able to show the beauty of the word and the consistency of the word and how it does fit together.
And certainly rightly dividing the word of truth. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, Chris, this latter half of chapter 2 in James' letter has historically made some people squirm, and we've talked about that, especially perhaps in traditions such as what we come from.
Yep.
But it's because of the way James focuses on the matter of works. We'll get into that a little bit more, contrasting James with Paul. But as you explained in your presentation the other day, James and Paul are coming to the same conclusion from different beginning points. In effect, between them and with input from numerous Old and New Testament passages, they present a well-rounded, even a robust theology of faith and works.
They absolutely do. And as I said in the sermon, I'll say it again, I think it bears repeating, we have different conversations going on, and we have to be really, really careful about that because Paul had one conversation going on with Jews and Gentiles. James has a different conversation about something different that includes some of the same words, but the other side of the coin, he has a conversation with Jewish people who are dispersed. And then, to add all the more to it, we have the Reformers who are having another discussion with the medieval Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
So you start bouncing between those three discussions, and it's no wonder that you might get a little bit confused.
Well, so that's a real good place to jump off and take a little digression here. Talk about basic Bible study principles. Hermeneutics, that's a word that we hear, kind of a five-cent word. I'm not sure it's worth that much, but theologians use that word. It simply means the study of general principles of Bible interpretation. You probably have another definition for it.
No, that's a pretty good one.
So with that said, what are some of those key principles of Bible interpretation that are especially relevant when we're studying a passage like James chapter 2?
Okay. Well, that is a good definition, though I guess I would change just a little bit of it, and that's this, that sometimes we talk about principles for interpreting the Bible as though they're different from principles for interpreting any other kind of speech, and they're not. In that same analogy of the letter, let's just use you for an example. Let's say you wrote a love letter to your fiance, obviously before you were married. And then we look 30 years later and you're writing a letter to your son.
It's been 31, by the way,
Okay. Just so everybody knows
that I do remember.
so many years later,
right.
Your son has a child and you write a letter to him. Now, if you were to compare those two letters, you might find different ways you use words or contradictions. And it's like, well, that's not fair. These were far apart about different things at different times. And just to pick a verse or a sentence out of each one and find a contradiction would be pretty unfair to the context in which you wrote the letter and who you wrote them to. So those basic principles of understanding speech are just as valid in the Bible as they are for us today. And that's the same principle we have to keep in mind as we do this.
Right. So what are some of those basic principles? I mean, you talked about this a little bit the other day, but what are some things that some of those two or three basic principles for James chapter 2?
I think the example we used of a trunk.
Right.
You know, that at first that might seem confusing. You mean a trunk can mean all those different things, a car, a tree, or an elephant? And the answer is, well, yes, but it's not that hard because given your context, you know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
Nobody ever wonders, well, why do we even have to use the word trunk? It's so confusing. No, it's not. Same thing is true with justification, except that we don't pay attention to the context. So if you look at the way Paul is using justification and what he's talking about, and you take a look at the way James is using the word justification, there is no contradiction. And we come back and we say, well, it's the same word. Yes, it is, but it's a whole different context. just like you wouldn't force someone to say, you mean I have to put my suitcases in the elephant trunk? Well, of course not. You know you put them in the car trunk.
Right.
So don't, you say, but it's the same word. Yes, it's the same word, but it's a different context. So don't try to make it mean exactly the same thing.
And it doesn't take a PhD to do this. I mean, we all do this every day, don't we?
Exactly right. We do it intuitively.
And now, in fact, sometimes those people without advanced degrees maybe even have a little easier time of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should be challenged.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think sometimes we preachers, I'll include me, contribute the wrong idea, because sometimes we'll say, this word means this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's probably true in this context.
Right, right.
But it doesn't always mean that everywhere.
Okay, so let's jump to a real good example of this. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, and you pointed this out, but it's interesting that James and Paul, writing perhaps as many as a decade to a decade and a half apart, both use the example of Abraham's faith and works to make their individual points about justification. Paul does it in Romans chapter 4, James here in chapter 2 of his letter. So now, you mentioned Sunday that words have different meanings. You talked about trunk. You talked about the word faith that we see in both of these passages. James says, was not Abraham our father justified by works?
Yes, exactly.
And Paul says in Romans chapter 4, oh, if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about. And by the way, that was not a positive spin on it. That was a negative context.
That's right.
So is this another example of that type of thing?
It's a perfect example of that. Again, both of them coming from different directions. So let me just briefly explain Paul in Romans 4. In Romans chapter 4, Paul makes a big deal about Abraham's life in Genesis 15 and in Genesis 17. In Genesis 15, God counted it to him as righteousness, which is what we call justification.
Mm-hmm.
God declared him to be righteous before God. Paul's argument then is, in chapter 17, he gets circumcised.
Hmm.
A good work, but it happens after, it happens after he is justified, speaking about his salvation. Now, James, on the other hand, uses the same word, but he's not speaking about that at all, because he uses Genesis 15 and Genesis 22.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know from Genesis 15, that's where Paul gets declared righteous.
Right.
So what James says, is he not justified in Genesis 22? So that's why we know, James clearly knows, it's credit of righteousness in chapter 15, but when he uses the word justified, what he's saying is, hasn't it become clear that he was justified before? His works demonstrate that he was justified before.
Hmm.
Now, I say that because that's the way James has been talking all the way through chapter 2. What does good faith do? Good faith shows itself up and evidences in works.
He's starting from a faith that is good.
Exactly right. He's starting from a faith. Paul starts from a faith that's good and questions whether or not the works are.
Mm-hmm.
And James looks at this and says, your works show whether or not your faith is good or not.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to say, well, they're the same words, therefore they're contradictory, is just to miss the context of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that James sounds an awful lot more like Jesus does. Because Jesus will say things like
Sermon on the Mount.
Less Sermon on the Mount, and he will say things like, let's see now, let's take a guy who builds a house on the sand and the house goes crash. And his final summation is, The one whose house goes crash is someone who hears the words and doesn't do them.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, that sounds exactly like James.
The seed and the sower, or the sower and the seed.
That's right.
Well, very good. Very interesting. And would you say that James is using the word justify somewhat as an adjective describing the faith of the individual?
I absolutely
Whereas Paul is using it more as a noun, saying that it is the foundation, it is the foundation.
Yes, because Paul is talking about the foundation of how does a person attain righteousness,
mm-hmm.
and what James is saying is how does someone show that their faith is genuine.
Right.
So the works demonstrate your faith is genuine, mm-hmm. and the works, in some sense, demonstrate that you have been justified.
Very interesting. Very good. Well, in my adult Bible fellowship discussion just this past Sunday, we do it before your sermon, so I'm always hoping that you're right on track with where I am.
Me too.
But Bart, someone pointed out that James' main intention is to challenge the readers about their personal faith in their works. Mm-hmm. Some, though, will use James' argument to evaluate other people's faith and works. Mm-hmm. Is it appropriate to use James' explanation as a template, so to speak, by which we evaluate the faith and works of those around us?
I think in some sense it is, but it's hard because you don't know what a person's motives are. Now, let's just go back to both Abraham and Rahab. How would we know Rahab really believed? Well, she did a pretty radical thing when she sent the spies off in a different direction. So if somebody was watching from the outside and saw the way she dealt with those spies, would they know exactly what was going on? I don't know if they would or not.
Right.
And some of the very best evidences of faith are ones that are done in secret. Go pray in secret. Give in secret. And guard your tongue. Well, we don't know what didn't come out of someone's mouth, right? That's kind of a secret to us. So that's where it gets a little bit trickier. I think it's always a lot smarter to say, what are my motives? Why did I do that? Mm-hmm. Did I give so that people would see I was giving? Or did I give in secret? Hmm. And that's one of the best tests, as you were telling me about the fellow you knew who had done some things in secret that were visiting the poor, visiting the orphans, taking care of people who couldn't take care of themselves.
Right.
That was just such a sweet, sweet story because you knew, you were sure that there was no benefit to that man who helped someone else, and it was done in secret. And I think that's where James would say that is pure religion.
Right.
That is exactly the way it ought to be practiced. Hmm. And nobody ever sees, sometimes nobody ever sees that.
And that's a blessing.
It is.
And I've been there, you've been there, and it's just as well people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. There are those people, Chris, who are striving to, as Paul says, work out their salvation with fear and trembling there in Philippians chapter 2. They're seeing positive results. There are also numbers of people who get so discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
They're ready to give up.
Yeah.
They're simply so tired and of trying and failing. And it's repetitive. Try, fail, try, fail. Hebrews 11, now you reference this passage in your message. What does this passage say to individuals in both groups?
Okay, Bart, now are we supposed to just say what we're supposed to say here, or can we actually be real?
Will you be real with me, please?
You have the
go-ahead green light.
Which one of those two groups do you think I'm in?
Well, of course, you're an elder of the church, and you are in the former group, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. I'm one of those who feels like I'm such a failure. The older I get, the more aware I am of how far I need to go. Mm. And that's exactly why Abraham is such an encouragement to me. Mm. Because if you saw the sermon or looked at the video on Sunday, you saw a chart of Abraham's life, and you saw two green check marks, and you saw about eight red X's.
They were everywhere. It was red.
They were everywhere. And the point was, Abraham failed. Oh, he failed again. Oh, he failed again. Oh, he failed again. And that takes, we covered it very quickly in 5 minutes or so, but those 10 or 12 chapters take 30 years or 40 years. And so Abraham is progressing over time, and it takes him until he's 99 or 100 to get to the point where he's got that kind of faith. And I think that just says to me, and all this whole time, as we've been thinking about trials in James 1, I always want people to think in these terms. This is not, did I succeed in the trial today, or what a failure I feel like because I can't get it right. But let's talk about the direction over 40 years. And where, as you pick yourself up off the ground,
and say, remember that thought. I'm coming back to that thought.
I messed up, and God, how should I do this right next time? That is, you exercise that faith every day and say, Lord, today, give me strength to do what I need to do. Help me not to listen to the devil's deceptions, but to trust in you, to not be afraid, to be bold. That faith gets exercised And someday, when God says, would you sacrifice everything for this? You might just be able to say, yes, sir, because you're my friend.
And I know you're not just pouring pepper over the sugar. I mean, you are seeing the older you get, the less you know about scriptures and everything, no matter what you're doing, teaching the Bible or otherwise. I looked down through this chapter 11 list, and you threw it up there on the screen the other day. Everybody has a problem. Uh-huh. And part of me wants to say, guys, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
David, come on. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Abraham, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
But then I remember, remember the other day, Sheridan? Or remember the other week? Or remember how you treated your wife? Remember how you treated your children?
Yeah.
The selfishness that goes on. I'm no different. And boy, the longer we live, the more we think about it as we mature. Those of you who are under 40, you'll get there. And if you don't get there, I'm just going to suggest maybe you're not on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've prayed that before I die, I can be, like the older people I've seen in my life who have persevered over time and finished well.
Mm-hmm.
I just had breakfast this morning with one of my heroes, Bob Grimacki, not because he's flashy, but because he's just been a humble...
He's just Bob, a
humble man who over the years has persevered and loved his wife and loved his kids and taught the Bible and ministered selflessly for 87 years and keeps doing it.
And Bob was one of those who ministered to my family over the years just by being Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife and their two children, they just ministered by being here.
Yeah.
And, of course, ministered to our church back about 17 years ago, just filling the pulpit, being here as we work through transition issues.
Mm-hmm.
What a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris, you mentioned 40 years. You've been teaching, by my count, you've been teaching and preaching God's Word for just over 40 years.
Yep, that's true.
Professionally and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a glimpse? You've already done a little bit. Give us a glimpse specifically into your life. Tell us how God is using this passage, James chapter 2, James in general, to challenge, to develop, to teach you. You've preached these passages before. You've taught them many times. What's he doing today in Chris Miller's life?
Today, I'm so convicted by the story of Rahab, because we typically, every time she's mentioned, she's called Rahab the prostitute.
Hmm.
Nobody ever gives her a break. James, Hebrews, nobody does. They always call her that, because that's where she came from, but that's not where she stayed.
Hmm.
And she has such astounding faith, and her faith caused her to take radical steps and chances that would result in her death if she were ever caught. And so I say to myself, is my life today, can it be explained just by someone who wants to be comfortable and safe and have no fear? Or am I living radically so that if Jesus isn't raised from the dead, my life doesn't make sense? So I just have to keep asking myself those questions. I don't want to be comfortable and easy and safe. I want to be able to respond to the call all the time, whether it's my tongue or the way I treat people or who I talk to or who I value. I keep preaching the Bible because I'm practicing. I haven't done it yet. And the same thing is true in the Christian life.
Yes. I carry in my Bible a 3x5 card.
Mm-hmm.
I made it a practice when my children were in the youth ministry here at Grace to every once in a while I'd go up and just sit with them, sit behind them. They didn't want me to sit with them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'd sit there, and one day our youth pastor gave everybody a 3x5 card, and he says, okay, everybody get out a pen. I want you to write, what is your idol?
Uh-huh.
I keep that in my Bible because if I were to be listed, I hope one day I could maybe be listed. I get to that point where I might be listed in here just because of faithfulness, finishing well, what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What would my name be? Mm-hmm. Bart the.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know what it is. I know what I would call myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be Bart the pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be careful of that because I want to please people.
Mm-hmm.
And as James, as we work through that, those are the things that taint my works.
Yeah.
Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that. That's a good insight, Bart, into your life and many of our lives. Certainly me, that could be a label for me too. But the interesting thing was about the passage last week about partiality and the message that Hutch is going to preach this coming week about the tongue have very specific applications.
Mm-hmm.
But the passage I talked about this week didn't have any applications. It was just very general because you look at what happened in Abraham's life and in Rahab's life, those are very unique things that, and so we have to ask the question, how uniquely does this touch my life?
Right.
You can't just give blanket applications.
You can't. It's got to be personal.
It's got to be very personal.
Personal. Mm-hmm. It's very incisive and cutting.
And so here's the question. In what way today has my faith been shown genuine or not by what I've chosen to do?
It's a great way to end our time together today. Chris Miller, thank you for joining us. Been talking with Chris today on Digging Deeper in Grace, and you can access Chris Miller's recent sermon in video and audio formats by visiting gracecedarville.org on the World Wide Web and clicking podcast on the media tab. We also invite you to join us next time. We'll be back and moving on to James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. We'll talk about the small but mighty tongue. Until then, I'm your host, Bart Sheridan. I'm thanking you again for tuning into this week's episode of Digging Deeper in Grace. Digging Deeper in Grace is a ministry of Grace Baptist Church in Cedarville, Ohio. Visit us online at gracecedarville.org and join us next time as we continue our discussion. In the meantime, we invite you to continue digging deeper in grace as you read God's Word.